Livia. Josh stands on a chair, his tan legs showing under the cut-off jeans he's wearing with a loose white shirt. I watch as he waves his arms at the guests who are busy chatting, trying to attract their attention. Max steps next to him and taps a fork against his bottle of beer until there are only murmurs. "Hello!" he shouts, and people cheer back. I'm standing with my friends from work, smiling at Josh, when, out of the corner of my eye, I see him. He's standing in front of the marquee, wearing a tuxedo with a red bow tie, and my stomach clenches horribly. He looks so confident and sure of himself that for a moment, I don't know how I'm going to be able to bear being in the same place as him. Since I found out about him and Marnie, I've managed to avoid him completely, arranging dinners with other friends, pretending to be ill so that Adam would have to cancel the dinner he'd arranged at ours, although it wasn't really a pretense because the thought of having to sit down and eat with Rob made me physically sick. But I was damned if I was going to cancel the party I'd dreamt about for so long. All I needed was to avoid him, I told myself, which wouldn't be difficult with another 99 people around. But now that it's here, the reality is very different. The rush of hate I feel is so violent that I have to turn away for a second and my cheeks flare as I try to control my breathing. "So for tonight," Josh continues, "we have a musical adventure for you all. At certain times during the evening, I'm going to play a song that one of you chose, and it's up to you to guess who chose it." There are more cheers and laughs, and I try to focus on this, everyone's enjoyment, to take my mind off Rob. "Do you understand?" he cries. "Yes!" everyone shouts back. "Then let the party begin!" Celebration starts playing through the speakers, and before anyone can stop me, I move away from the marquee and go and stand at the top of the steps, as far from Rob as I can. Max is hovering nearby, filming and taking photos, and I'm glad he insisted on being the photographer, because otherwise we might not have had any. Adam confiscating everyone's phones was so unlike him I nearly laughed, thinking at first he was joking. We never talked about a no-phone policy, so it must have been a spur-of-the-moment decision. Maybe he was worried that people would spend half of the evening checking their messages, but I don't think any of our friends would do that. I take a few deep breaths. This moment of solitude, amongst so many people, has calmed me, and I smile as I watch my friends laughing together, already having a good time. I smooth my dress down, rearranging the skirt so that the hem is straight and flattening the material that is bunched slightly around my waist. I've been worrying about this dress since I bought it, wondering if it was the right thing to wear, wondering if people would think, because of the colour, that I was trying to reenact my wedding. But I've only had compliments, and no one has said that I look like a bride. I did have a moment earlier, though, after I'd done my hair and makeup. As I checked my appearance in the mirror, I suddenly thought of the roses Marnie had sent me and ran downstairs to get them. Back upstairs, I took them from the vase, dried the stems with a towel, and put them to one side while I slid into my dress. Then, before looking at myself in the mirror, I picked up the bouquet and held it in front of me like a bride would, walking up the aisle. When I looked up and saw my reflection, tears sprang to my eyes. I wish there'd been someone to take a photo, so that I could have taken it out and looked at it in secret, a reminder of what could have been. But there was only Adam and Josh, and I was too embarrassed to let them see me playing at being a bride. I stared at myself for a long time, imprinting the image on my brain, because I wanted to remember how I might have looked on my wedding day. And then I raised the roses to my face and breathed in their heady smell. "Thank you, Marnie," I murmured. "Thank you for making it possible for me to see." The sad thing is, if she had been here, and if what has happened hadn't happened, we'd have shared the moment together, messing around and giggling. Maybe later, once everyone has left, I'll ask Adam to take a photo of me with the roses to send to Marnie. Or if I preserve the roses, I can wait until she comes home at the end of the month, put the dress back on, and recreate the scene for her. But I'm not sure I'll feel like dressing up then. It was strange, that moment on the terrace with Adam, when we were waiting for everyone to arrive. There was a sort of gap, a moment in time when nothing was happening, and there was nothing to do. A moment when Adam and I ran out of words. A moment where it seemed as if the world had stopped turning, and we were suspended in time, waiting for it to move on. I see Kieran waving and go over, lifting my hem as I walk. "I told him," she says, smiling. She takes a glass of juice from a passing tray, and I do the same. I will have alcohol, but later, once everyone has arrived. "I told Nelson I was pregnant." "How did he take it?" "Well, after I resuscitated him, he seemed okay. Dazed, but okay." She sweeps her arm around the garden. "This is beautiful, Liv." "I know. And it's all down to Josh and Max. They've done a fantastic job. I can't wait until it gets dark. It's going to look amazing." "So, was it worth the wait?" The sound of Jess's voice behind me makes my heart start hammering, terrified that Rob will be standing next to her. I turn slowly, giving myself time, wondering if I'm going to be able to hold it together. Relief at finding Jess on her own brings tears to my eyes. "Yes," I say, blinking them back. "It was worth the wait." Jess takes my tears as tears of happiness, that at last I'm having my big day, and gives me a hug.
"You look beautiful."
"Not too much like a bride?"
"Not at all."
I peer over her shoulder. "Where's Cleo?" I ask, looking for Rob at the same time.
"Talking to Josh and Max."
"Oh yes, I can see her. I'll catch her later. By the way, did either of you pick up my phone at the spa?"
"I didn't," says Kieran.
"Me neither." Jess looks worried. "Why, have you lost it?"
"I don't know. It's not in my bag, so I thought I must have left it on the table when we were having lunch."
"Do you want me to phone them?" Kieran asks.
"Oh, I can't. Adam's confiscated our phones."
"Don't worry. I'll call them tomorrow."
I turn to Jess. "Shall I get you a chair?" She gives me a grateful smile. "I'm fine for now."
"Have you seen the photos of Marnie?"
Kieran asks her.
"Not yet."
Out of the corner of my eye, I see Rob approaching.
"Oh, look, there's Izzy,"
I say, ducking away. "Sorry, I need to go and say hello." I have a hug and a catch-up with Izzy, who wants to go and make sure the caterers are doing their job. I tell her that everything is under control, but Izzy loves organising everyone and manages to do it without causing offence.
"Have you heard from Marnie?"
she asks, reaching out and taking a canapé from a passing tray.
"Yes, I got a message from her this morning, and she sent me some lovely yellow roses.
The ones in the kitchen, they're beautiful. I can't wait to see her when she comes back. I miss my favourite niece."
I smile, because Marnie is her only niece. Izzy and Ian can't have children, so Marnie is hugely important to them. Since she was old enough to hold a teacup, Izzy has taken Marnie for afternoon tea in London for every birthday, trying a different hotel each year and rating them afterwards according to the quality of the scones, the freshness of the sandwiches, and the variety of cakes.
"You should go and see the photos," I say, pointing to the fence. "There's one of you holding her just after she was born."
"I'm glad I'm in at least one of them."
I had such mixed emotions when I saw the photos earlier. Delight and pride, of course, but also a slight dismay that there were some I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember if I'd taken them, or if they'd been taken by someone else, where they'd been taken, why they'd been taken. The one where she's wearing her school uniform. What occasion was that to mark? A first day back at school? An end-of-term event? Or simply because she'd looked cute that morning? And the one on the beach? Where? When? Why?
I was haunted by the memories the photos didn't bring back, and haunted by the innocence of them, and disbelief that Marnie, my beautiful Marnie, could do what she's done. I'd been proud of the way that, during her calls to us, she would always ask how Jess was doing and how she was managing her symptoms. But after what Kieran told me earlier today, about Rob being in denial, about the way he insists to Nelson that Jess is still independent, I have a horrible sense of foreboding. What if the reason Marnie is coming back at the end of the month is not just to see Rob, but because he's planning to leave Jess and she wants to be here to secretly support him through it? Izzy leaves to look at the photos, and after checking that Rob is nowhere near me, I look down towards the terrace to see if anyone else has arrived. I know it's not logical. Not when I haven't seen them for over 20 years. Not when they didn't reply to the invitation I sent them or send me a card. But I can't let go of the faint hope that my parents will turn up. But there's only Adam, his head bent over something which I suspect is his mobile. He looks so forlorn standing there on his own that I'm suddenly overwhelmed by a weird feeling of displacement. That we aren't where we should be. That everything going on around us is wrong. I want to shout at Josh to stop the music, to turn off the lights, to tell everyone that there's been a terrible mistake and could they please go home. But Jeannie and Mike are coming up the steps, their faces lit with smiles, and the feeling passes as quickly as it came.
8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Adam. More people arrive. I stand on the terrace and go through the motions, meet, greet, move them towards the steps and onto the lawn. The caterers stop to offer me things to eat as they walk by with trays of food, but I can't bring myself to take anything. And then, at last, a lull. Dad! I look up and see Josh waving to me. Can you come here? Has everybody arrived, do you think? I call, reluctant to leave the terrace until I'm sure. I have to shout over the sound of Aretha Franklin singing Respect. Jess's choice, I heard someone say. Yes, I think so. How is it possible that since Nelson and Kieran arrived at 7:30, I've been so focused on what people are saying so they won't guess anything is wrong, that there have been stretches of a few seconds, maybe even a few minutes, when Marnie completely disappeared from my mind. It feels wrong that I'm able to smile and chat when... I quickly close my mind. I can't let doubt in. Not with Josh waiting to speak to me. I close the side gate and make my way over. Mum's ring. Did you pick it up? I stare at him. No, Oh, Dad! You disappeared for ages after Mum got back, so I thought you'd gone to get it. I was upstairs getting ready. I rub at my face. The jeweller's phoned to tell me they couldn't get it done in time. I thought you were going to give it to her anyway. He looks at me, frowning. If you didn't go and pick it up, does that mean you don't have a present to give her? I'll explain, I say. She'll understand. Right. I can see he's disappointed. It's just that I've heard people asking what you'd given her, and she said that the party was enough, but I think everyone might be expecting you to give her something later. Do you have a photo of the ring? You could at least give her that. No, I don't. Well, could you maybe find a photo of something similar? Yes, good idea, I say. Glad of an excuse to get away. I'll go and do that now. Don't be long, he calls as I head towards the house. I don't want to have to explain to everyone why you've gone missing. I go up to the bedroom, but instead of looking for a photo on my iPad, I sit down on the bed. Mimi's in her favourite place, watching me with those unblinking green eyes. Ignoring her, I take out my phone and sit staring at it for a moment. I should call the emergency number now. I should have called before. I don't know what the hell I'm doing not calling. A burst of laughter comes through the window, and glad of the excuse, I get to my feet and look outside. Nelson is standing in the middle of a group of people, and I realise that he, or Kieran, has just announced that she's expecting twins. The music stops, and then the song Congratulations starts playing. Everyone is applauding, and I'm struck by the terrible irony of the situation. There's been a plane crash. A crash which our daughter might have been part of, and people are singing along to Congratulations and applauding. It hits me then, the enormity of what I've done. I've let the party go on. I've let people drink champagne and laugh and sing. I sink onto the bed and bury my face in my hands. What was I thinking? Mimi, sensing my distress, comes to investigate, but I push her away. She comes closer again, not used to my reaction, and I round on her. No, Mimi, leave it! She darts off the bed, and I sink further. What have I done? I have to stop the party now, this minute, before it goes any further. I shouldn't have let it get this far. I should have cancelled it before it had even started. Now, if the worst has happened, I'm going to have to go down and ask everyone to go home, and then tell them why. I can't. I couldn't. My mind starts spiraling. Maybe I could ask Nelson. If I find out that Marnie was on the flight, maybe Nelson could tell everyone. So would I tell Nelson before I tell Livia? I get to my feet and start pacing the room. No, I need to tell Livia first, then Josh. Mum and Dad, too, they should hear it from me, but once I've told Livia, once I've told Josh. Maybe I should include Izzy and Ian with Mum and Dad, because they're family too. Or should I tell them after, once I've told Livia, once I've told Josh, once I've told Mum and Dad? Or maybe leave Nelson to tell them along with everyone else? And how will I tell them? There are no words. Even the thought is unthinkable. And then, a ring on the doorbell. I whip round, staring at the bedroom door, my heart already racing. We're not expecting anyone else. All the guests have arrived. The bell sounds again, more timidly, this time, as if whoever is on the other side of the door is having second thoughts about having pressed the bell the first time. Just as Marnie might do if she was worried that someone other than me might open the door and spoil the surprise. Just as Marnie might do if she'd gone around to the side gate and hadn't found me there, waiting to help her into the box. I look down at my phone. It's 8:35. Earlier than she was due to arrive. But what if she was put on a direct flight to London straight from Cairo, like she'd said in her message this morning? I run down the stairs, stupidly near to tears. I could have saved myself so much anguish if I'd thought things through. Of course they'd try to get passengers stranded in Cairo to their final destination as quickly as possible. I fumble with the latch. I can already see myself hugging her, telling her that I thought she was on the plane that crashed. I fling open the door. Her name dies on my lips, and I stare in disbelief because it isn't Marnie, but someone else. Someone smaller than Marnie, with darker hair. Someone I know, but who in my confusion I can't place. The young woman takes a sudden step back.
Hello, Mr. Harmon, she says, flustered. I hope it's all right that I'm here. We changed my granddad's celebration to tomorrow so that I could come to the party tonight. I didn't tell Josh because I wanted to surprise him. Maybe I should have let you or Mrs. Harmon know. I didn't think. I'm sorry.
Josh's girlfriend, I realise dully. Not Marnie. Amy, I say. I don't want her here. All I want is to slam the door in her face, scream at her to go away. She looks behind me into the hall,
her movement faltering when she sees my face.
"I'm sorry," she says again. "I should have called."
I stand back, not trusting myself to speak. She steps into the hallway and waits, hovering uncertainly. "Well, go on through," I say roughly. "I'm sure Josh will be pleased to see you." She hurries off and I lean against the wall, adrenaline making my heart thump painfully. It's not her fault, I tell myself. It's not her fault she's not Marnie. I walk slowly after her and watch from the door as she tiptoes across the lawn, around groups of people to where Josh is standing next to Max, his back to her. She reaches up and puts her hands over his eyes, and when he swivels round, it's not Amy I see laughing at the look on his face, but Marnie. Because she did the same to me the time she came home unexpectedly from university to surprise me on my birthday. I can still feel the touch of her hands as she sneaked up behind me and covered my eyes.
"You okay, Adam?"
Overwhelmed by the memory, it takes me a moment to realize that Nelson is talking to me. I pull myself back to the present. "Yes, I'm fine. I didn't know she was coming, that's all."
"Amy?"
"Yes." I take a step out onto the terrace, moving myself away from him.
"Sorry, Nelson, I need to go and socialize."
I walk unsteadily up the steps. People crowd round, telling me what a wonderful party it is and how lovely Livia looks, and isn't it a shame that Marnie isn't here? It becomes too much. I look around desperately. I shouldn't be here. None of us should be. And then I hear Livia laugh from somewhere behind me, and when I turn, I see her standing in the middle of a group of her friends. She looks so beautiful, so happy, so... I search for the word. Free. And I know that I'm only going to make the call once the party is over.
Livia. There are so many people talking at the same time that I'm finding it hard to concentrate. Luckily, the music is loud, and I'm able to smile, laugh, and nod without anyone realizing how distracted I am. The effort needed to avoid Rob is beginning to weigh on me. I hate that I'm having to play this stupid game of cat and mouse at the party I've been waiting for so long. Stupid tears prick my eyelids, and I bow my head, blinking them away quickly. Someone hands me a drink, and looking up, I see Ian, Izzy's husband. "Thank you," I say gratefully. "It must be quite overwhelming," he says, studying my face. We're the same height, and his eyes, level with mine, are almost black. With Izzy being so extrovert, it's easy to overlook Ian, who is quieter and gentler. But he's one of my favourite people, even though most of the time I have no idea what he's really thinking. "It's amazing to have everyone here," I tell him. He nods. "But there are people missing." My mind flits to Marnie and away again, because it's too painful to think of her, then turns to my parents. They haven't come. Of course they haven't, and I know they won't now. "I thought my parents might come," I say. "I invited them. Stupid, I know." "It's not stupid," he replies, and I want to hug him. "I'm sorry they haven't turned up." If my 40th birthday isn't enough of a reason for them to hold out an olive branch, there's not much more I can do, I say with a shrug. I can't believe they still hold a grudge after all these years. "Time can either mend bridges or push them further apart," he says. I look quizzically at him. "What made you so wise?" "Being with Izzy, probably." We laugh softly, and with a quick smile, he goes to get himself another drink. I take a sip of the one he gave me, knowing it's time to stop wishing for something that will never happen. It's too late anyway. What I wanted was for my parents to be part of Josh and Marnie's lives,
but Josh and Marnie have already left home. They have their own lives, which might not have room for grandparents they barely know. My mother is 68 now, my father 72. Ian is right. Time hasn't mended anything between us. Their hearts will only harden more with age, not soften. Livia! A hand touches my arm. I turn and see Paula looking fabulous in a long, floaty dress. She's carrying silver heels in her hand, and her face is flushed from dancing. Hello, Paula, I say, giving her a hug. It's lovely to see you. Are you having a good time? Yes! It's so nice to be able to catch up with everybody from the office. I've missed them. So how are you? I say, prepared to give her my full attention, because I know how lonely she is now that she's retired and has no close family nearby. While she talks about the book club she's recently become a member of, I keep my eye out for Rob. At one point, I see him heading my way, but when he sees I'm with Paula, he turns back quickly. She's joined us a couple of times for lunch at the weekends, so he's met her before and knows how much she loves to talk. He couldn't possibly have anyone talk more than him, could he? From the lawn, I hear Josh announce that the next song is someone's song choice and that we have to guess whose it is. I know this one, Paula says as it begins to play. It's We Are Family. She takes my hand and pulls me to where a group of people are dancing. It has to be Kieran, I say. Look at the way she's grinning. I point at Kieran. It's Kieran, I shout. Josh gives me the thumbs up, and people clap and laugh as Nelson races across the lawn, dodging around people to scoop Kieran into his arms. We are family, he sings. I got all my daughters with me. I wish I had my sons with me, Paula says sadly. I hate that they're living so far away. Before I can reply, Jeannie comes over, wanting, I'm guessing, to talk about Nelson and Kieran having another set of twins. 5 children, she says, laughing, and I can see Adam so clearly in her face when she smiles. He's going to have to swap that great big motorbike of his for a people carrier. I think he'd rather sell the house than his motorbike, I joke. He'll probably have to sell it anyway. Kieran was saying she doesn't know where she'll put another 2 babies, to which Nelson replied that there's a perfectly good shed in the garden. Somebody comes onto the terrace, and I crane my neck around Jeannie, expecting to see Adam. But it's Amy, and my delight at seeing her, because I know how happy Josh will be that she's here, is short-lived when I see the look on her face. Something has obviously upset her, and I hope it's not to do with her grandfather. I'm about to go over to her when she runs up the steps and tiptoes towards Josh. She puts her hands over his eyes, her frown replaced by a smile, and I laugh at Josh's surprise. But then she says something, and they both look towards the kitchen, where Adam is standing in the doorway. He must have let Amy in, I realise. I excuse myself to Jeannie and Paula, intending to go to him, but Nelson beats me to it, so I make my way over to Josh and Amy instead. Hello, Amy, I say, aware that Max has moved away. It's lovely to see you. I didn't think you were able to come. Happy birthday, she says, hugging me. My mum told my grandfather about your party, and he insisted I came. He said that at his age it didn't matter if we didn't celebrate his birthday on the day, so we're having his party tomorrow afternoon instead. That's lovely of him. Well, I'm very glad you're here. I'm not sure Mr. Harmon is, she says, the frown returning to her pretty face. What do you mean? Just that he didn't seem very happy to see me. Josh turns to me. You didn't tell him, did you, Mum? No, of course not. Well, he must have found out somehow. There's no reason for him to have been off with Amy otherwise. Why don't you go and speak to him? What now? No time like the present, I say lightly. He's going to be so disappointed, Josh mutters. He'll understand. I'm not so sure. You won't know until you talk to him. Go on, Amy says, giving him a little push. You may as well get it over and done with. He goes off reluctantly, and feeling eyes on me, I realise that Max wants to speak to Amy and is waiting for me to leave. I better go and circulate, I say, giving Amy a quick smile. I'll see you later. I turn away and see Rob only yards from me. I want to run, but like a rabbit caught in the glare of a car's headlights, I don't seem to be able to move. And then Max, coming over to talk to Amy, walks clumsily into Rob with his rugby player build and knocks him momentarily off balance.
You drunk already?
I hear him say good-naturedly to Max. Because that's Rob, everyone's best friend. I don't stay around to hear the rest of their conversation, but duck into the empty marquee, needing a few minutes on my own. I press my palms to my face, feeling the heat in my cheeks. I must have been mad to think I was going to be able to avoid Rob this evening. At some point, we're going to come face to face. He's not going to stop seeking me out because he won't know why he shouldn't. What I should have done, I realise with hindsight, was email him yesterday and tell him not to come tonight, to pretend he was ill so that Jess could still come, because I know about him and Marnie. But he'd have told Marnie that I know, and I need to speak to her, to get her side of the story before Rob tells her what to say, before she has time to prepare to lie about how and when it all started, if only to protect Rob. And while she's caught unawares, I want to ask her if she realises the full extent of what she's done, because I can't believe that she does. I can't believe that she's gone into this relationship with Rob with her eyes wide open. She can't have realised that once their affair becomes common knowledge, Adam will never speak to Rob again, which will affect his friendship with Nelson. She can't have realised that Nelson might never speak to Rob again, which will affect their whole family. She can't know that Jess might never speak to me again, or realise that Kieran's loyalties will be torn because Jess is her sister-in-law. She can't know that Josh will be horrified at what she's done, or realise that for Cleo to know her best friend is having an affair with her father will be devastating. It isn't possible that Marnie has realised any of this, because if she has, I don't think I could ever forgive her.
9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Adam.
Dad?
I turn my attention away from Izzy. Yes, Josh?
Sorry to interrupt. Aunt Izzy, can I borrow Dad for a minute?
Sure. And make him take something for that migraine. He looks terrible.
Should we go to your shed?
Josh suggests. As I turn to follow him, I see Amy talking to Rob and Max, and notice that although Max seems to be listening, he's actually staring over their shoulders at something or someone. I follow his eyes and see that they're fixed on Livia, who is disappearing into the marquee. The way he's looking at her makes me pause, throws my mind off balance. What is going on with Livia and Max?
Are you coming, Dad?
We push our way into the shed. Josh leans back against the workbench, his arms folded in front of him. I remember now that I'm meant to have found a photo of the ring to give Livia. I didn't find one, I say.
What?
A photo. He takes a really deep breath.
Sorry, Dad, but I'm not going.
Not going where? I say. Does he really think that I want him to go and pick up the ring even though the shop is shut?
To New York.
New York?
Yes, I don't want to take up my internship.
It's so far removed from what I thought he was going to say that it takes me a moment to catch up.
Right.
I say. Okay. He pushes away from the bench and begins pacing up and down.
I know you must be disappointed, and I know my reason for not going is a bit pathetic. The thing is, I love Amy and I don't want to be apart from her for a year. It's been hard enough these last 6 months with me in Bristol and her in Exeter.
He gives an embarrassed laugh.
I think she's the one, Dad, I really do. I know I'm only 22, We're nearly 23, and I haven't known her very long. But there's something about Amy.
Josh, I say, stopping him. It's fine. It's not a problem. If you don't want to go to New York, don't go. He stares, relief washing over his face.
Really?
Yes. I swallow painfully. Life's too short. Just do what makes you happy. He shakes his head slowly.
You wouldn't believe how worried I've been about telling you.
Why?
Because you found me the internship.
That doesn't mean you have to take it. He runs a hand through his hair.
I must seem so ungrateful.
Not at all. A wave of exhaustion comes over me. Look, can we talk about this later? I don't know, maybe Bill can switch your internship to London. I presume that's where you want to be. Near Amy.
Yes. Marnie's with me on this one, by the way. She says it's not worth going abroad if I spend most of my time there being miserable.
Marnie. Let's talk tomorrow, I say. We'd better get back out there.
I need to go and find Amy. She thinks you're annoyed with her, that you think it's her fault I don't want to go to New York.
And please tell her I'm not. He looks at me curiously.
So why were you off with her when she arrived if you didn't know?
It's this migraine, that's all.
Thanks, Dad.
He comes over and gives me an unexpected hug.
You really are the best.
He leaves, and I stand there trying to process what he just told me. It seems so unimportant compared to Marnie. Would I really have been disappointed, bitter even, if he'd told me any day before today that he wasn't taking up the internship? Probably. I leave my shed. I'm desperate to know what time it is, but for the first time tonight I can't face checking my phone. Amy arrived around 8:35, that I know. Then I was stopped by Nelson, then I spoke to another couple of people, got them a drink, made sure Jess was all right, got her and Kieran a drink. All that must have taken 30 minutes. Then Izzy cornered me for at least 10 minutes, then Josh for another 10. It must be around 9:30. In the world I inhabited before, Marnie would have arrived. I'd have got her text to say she was at the gate. I'd have met her at the side door, and after a quick secret hug, I'd have taken the box from under the table and helped her into it. And now, right now, we'd all be down on the terrace. I walk across the lawn, vaguely aware of Livia disappearing into the house with Max. I keep my eyes fixed ahead so that I don't get ambushed by people wanting to chat. When I get to the top of the steps, I pause. In my mind, I see everyone gathered on the terrace below, waiting for Livia to open her present. I'm standing next to her, and as she bends to open the box, Marnie springs out. Everyone is laughing and exclaiming, and Livia, after hugging Marnie until they're both in tears, throws her arms around me and tells me it's the best present ever. I see everything. And then I see nothing. Except someone's coming in the side gate, pushing it slowly open. My heart starts racing, just as it did when Amy rang on the doorbell. Don't get your hopes up, I tell myself. You'll only be disappointed. But I'm already running down the steps and across the terrace. I get to the gate and jerk at it, the wood sticking as I pull it open. And then I stop, because it's not Marnie. My body slumps against the wooden panels. I bite down hard on the inside of my mouth until I taste blood and stare at an older woman I've never seen before. Hello, Adam, she says. And recognizing her voice, I realize that I'm looking at Livia's mother. Patricia, I say dully. I received your letter. She waits for me to say something. And an invitation for tonight, she says when I don't respond. I'd like to see Livia, if that's all right. A wave of panic sweeps through me.
Is this something else I've got wrong? What if Livia doesn't want to see her mother, not here? Not now, not at her party? And what if her mother hasn't come to make peace, but to cause more trouble? She tries again.
I won't stay long. I have a car waiting for me.
I don't want any trouble, I say, finding my voice. It's a special day for Livia.
Yes, I know.
No, you don't know, I say roughly. This party is to make up for the wedding she never had. Her face flushes.
I wish things could have been different.
So why are they now? She holds my gaze.
Her father died a few months back.
She doesn't say anything more, but it's enough. Livia's father was a domineering bully, and when I think about it now, he was the one who told Livia they didn't want anything more to do with her. Maybe her mother didn't have a choice. I look at her more closely. It's not surprising I didn't recognize her. Her hair was always pulled back in a severe bun. Now it hangs to her shoulders in soft waves. I'm not sure today's the right time to tell her, I say, wishing more than ever that I hadn't written that letter.
I'd still like to see her,
she says, standing her ground.
Josh and Marnie, too, just to say hello. Has Marnie arrived yet?
Livia. The best thing about so many people being at the party is that nobody has noticed I've been missing for a while. I might have stayed in the marquee longer, but Liz and her team started bringing the food in, and now people are serving themselves. I duck out of the marquee and take a quick look around. Josh is with Amy and Max, and Rob is thankfully nowhere to be seen. But safety is in numbers, and spotting a group of my work friends chatting together, I go over. At the same time as I'm encouraging them to go and have something to eat, I'm wondering how Adam took the news that Josh doesn't want to go to the States. Fortunately for Josh, his dad's disappointment will soon be trumped by something bigger. During my time alone in the marquee, I was trying to work out whether it would be better to wait until we're in France to tell Adam about Marnie and Rob. I have visions of him jumping on his motorbike and riding off to find Rob, then beating the hell out of him. And although the thought is viciously pleasing, I can't risk him doing that. If we're not in the same country, the fallout will be less immediate, so hopefully less traumatic for everyone. And again, there's that thing. If I tell him as soon as the party is over, he'll think I didn't tell him before because I wanted it to go ahead, no matter what. I look around and see Cleo sitting on the wall, taking a rest from dancing. I go over and sit down beside her. How's my favourite goddaughter? I ask, putting my arm around her and giving her a hug. Happy birthday, Livia, she says, hugging me back. Are you having a nice day? The best, I tell her. I'm sorry I didn't come and say hello when I arrived, but you always seem to be with someone. No one as important as you. Thank you for coming. It's bad enough Marnie not being here. I know I should ask her if she had a nice time in Hong Kong, because it will be strange if I don't. But I hate that the only reason Rob took her there was so that he and Marnie could be together. Did you have a good time in Hong Kong? I ask, anyway. Yes, it was lovely to see Marnie, although she was at uni more than I expected. And Dad ended up having to work, so I spent a lot of time on my own. How could you, Marnie? I think. How could you? So how's life? She pulls a face. I think Charlie might be cheating on me. Otherwise everything's fine. Oh, Cleo, I'm sorry. Do you want me to sort him out for you? I add, trying to lighten the moment. She smiles. You sound like Dad. She couldn't have said anything worse. Rage rises inside me at Rob threatening to sort out his daughter's boyfriend, who might or might not be cheating on her, when he's having an affair with my daughter, his daughter's best friend. I love your dress, I say,
to hide the fact that I've stood up abruptly. I'd better go and find Adam. I've barely seen him since the party started. He keeps doing a disappearing act. Mum says he's got a migraine. I nod. Maybe if I can get him to eat something, he'll feel better. I'll catch you later. Enjoy your party, she calls after me. Thank you. I move to the centre of the lawn and slowly turn myself in a circle, hoping to spot Adam. An arm snakes around my waist. Hello, birthday girl. Have you been avoiding me? It's here, the moment I've been dreading. My flesh crawls at the touch of his hand. He's always been a flirt, maybe another reason why Adam doesn't particularly like him. And although it bothered me for Jess, I always went along with it. It's how Rob is, how he's always been. But now, I'm overwhelmed with disgust at the thought that he has touched me, hugged me, and kissed me in that lingering way of his, when he was also touching, hugging, and kissing my daughter. White-hot anger flares inside me. I wrench my body round, dislodging his arm roughly. Hey, what's up? He asks, looking at me in confusion. The urge to lunge at him, slap him, scratch him, scream at him is stronger than anything I've ever felt. I take a step towards him, my teeth and fist clenched. But before I can do anything, someone takes hold of my wrist and pulls me back, away from Rob. Sorry, Rob. Max's voice comes from behind me. Livia is needed in the kitchen. Something to do with the desserts melting, apparently. Rob presses his hands together in a prayer. Please don't let anything happen to the desserts, Livia. You know how much I love a good pud. It's incredible the way he's able to tell himself that a look on my face couldn't possibly be anything to do with him, because isn't he such a good guy? And anyway, nobody could possibly know about him and Marnie, because everyone is gullible enough to take both him and what he says at face value. I'm still seething as Max walks me to the kitchen. There's no sign of Liz. She must be in the dining room, Max says, leading me through. She's not there either, but my thoughts are too full of Rob to register that anything is wrong until Max closes the door and leans against it, stopping anyone from coming in. What are you doing, Max? I ask. But I know what he's doing. I just can't believe that he's chosen my party to ask me why I've been off with him for the last few months. I really need to get back out there. He doesn't say anything, just looks at me, his blue eyes boring into me, weighing me up. Look, I'm sorry if I've been off with you lately, I say impatiently. I've just been defending Marnie because I know the two of you have fallen out. I know I shouldn't take sides, but Marnie's had a bit of a difficult time lately, and I thought... I stop, because how can I tell him that I thought he and Marnie were in a relationship? Go on, he says. I thought maybe you wanted a relationship with her, and she didn't, I say. Max frowns. Gross. Marnie's like a sister to me, which is why I'm so bloody angry with her. It bursts out of him. I know, Livia. I know about her and Rob. My heart misses a beat. What do you mean? He looks at me in alarm. Oh, God, don't tell me you don't know. He pushes away from the door. I thought, because of the way you've been avoiding Rob all evening, and the way you looked as if you were about to kill him just now, that you knew. He runs a hand through his hair. Shit. I lay a hand on his arm. It's okay, Max. I do know. I just didn't think that anyone else did. How did you find out? The relief that washes over him is quickly replaced by anger. I went to surprise Marnie once in Durham, and I saw them together. When? About a year ago? Maybe a bit more. March, I think. Not long after Rob began spending 2 days a week in Darlington, I realise bitterly. Why didn't you say anything to me or Adam? Because when I asked Marnie about it, she said I'd made a mistake. When I told her what I'd seen, she said it was a moment of madness and that it was all over, and I believed her. until last December, when Josh mentioned that Rob's company was sending him to Singapore for a week. I know it's not that close to Hong Kong, but it made me suspicious, because why was he suddenly going to Singapore? I looked up the company, and they do have offices there, but it still didn't feel right. I couldn't stop wondering if he was going to see Marnie, so I emailed her and asked if I could visit her around the time of Rob's trip to Singapore. And she did everything to put me off, telling me first that she had to work on her assignment, then that she was going away. Remembering how Marnie had involved me in that particular lie, I closed my eyes. "I don't want him here," she'd said, which had made me think that Max was the father of the baby she'd lost. Had she known I'd jumped to that conclusion? Had she said it on purpose so that I'd lie for her? I ended up phoning Rob's work the week he was meant to be in Singapore, asking to speak to him. Max goes on. They told me he was away on holiday. So I phoned Marnie and asked her straight up if he was with her. She said, I'll give you the polite version, that it was nothing to do with me, and hung up on me. I haven't spoken to her since. I'm sorry, Max, I say helplessly. I knew I should say something to you, but I couldn't. I mean, Marnie was right, but it wasn't really my problem, and I didn't have actual proof that he was there. He pauses. How long have you known? Since he and Cleo went to see Marnie for Cleo's birthday. I FaceTimed her and saw him in the background. He was... I stumble over the memory and the word naked. She doesn't know that I know. I need to speak to Adam first. Why haven't you? Sorry, but I couldn't believe it when I asked Josh if Rob and Jess were coming tonight and he told me they were. I thought that neither of you must know, especially when I saw that Adam was all right with Rob. And then I saw that you weren't. I'm glad Josh doesn't know. He'd probably kill Rob. Even I want to kill him. Adam will too, which is why I'm worried about telling him. It's not only that, though, it's also Marnie. Adam is going to be devastated. She's always been up there on a pedestal for him. Max shakes his head. I can't believe she's been so stupid. Sorry, he says, looking guilty. Don't apologise. I'm furious with her too. You are going to tell Adam, right? Yes, once the party is over. I just wanted us all to have this one last time together. He nods, but I'm not sure he understands. I'm scared of what it's going to do to us all, I say, moving towards the door. I'd better get back out there. And thanks, Max, for stopping me from breaking Rob's face. I will at some point, but my party isn't the time or place to do it. I walk back outside and see Adam at the side gate talking to an elderly woman, and I hope she hasn't come to complain about the noise. I pushed a note through the letterbox of every nearby house, warning them that there will be music until 2 a.m. Adam looks as if he needs rescuing, so I go over. Adam, I say, is everything all right?
10 p.m. to 11 p.m. Adam. I make my way back to Livia's mother, who I'd left at the side gate while I went to find Livia. Remembering that I'd seen her going into the house with Max a few minutes before, I headed inside and heard them talking in the dining room. I was about to open the door when I heard my name, Max saying, "You are going to tell Adam, right?" And instead of interrupting, I stood there, trying to listen to what they were saying until Livia said she needed to get back to the party. Now I wish I'd just opened the damn door, because I can't think what Liv might need to tell me. She said something about wanting us all to have this one last time together. But she can't know about Marnie. She can't. She would never do what I've done. The weight of it is so heavy it's a struggle to breathe. I want to be on my own. I want to go upstairs and hide myself away. But Livia's mother is looking at me expectantly. She was with someone, I say.
I didn't like to interrupt, but she'll be out in a minute.
Thank you.
How am I going to be able to warn Livia that her mother is here before she comes out and sees her? Adam? I whip round at the sound of her voice behind me. Is everything all right?
I move quickly to block her mother from view, wanting to prepare her.
There's someone to see you,
I say hesitantly. The colour drains from her face because she's guessed, maybe from the strained look on mine, who I'm referring to. Neither of us seem able to move, so Livia's mother steps out from behind me.
Hello, Livia.
And as her eyes fall on the daughter she hasn't seen for 23 years, they fill with tears. For a moment, Livia just stares.
Mum.
She takes a step towards her as if she can't quite believe what she's seeing and needs to take a closer look. She looks so confused, I want to fold her in my arms.
Is that really you?
Livia's mum raises her hand and touches her hair self-consciously.
Yes, I thought I'd come and wish you a happy birthday,
she says, attempting a smile. Livia looks behind her.
Is Dad here?
I turn to the table where the box is waiting for Marnie and pull out the two chairs that Livia and I sat on to drink Kieran's champagne. Why don't the two of you sit here? I suggest, and they move slowly towards the table, their eyes still on each other. Call me if you need me, I tell Livia, giving her a kiss. I won't be far. At the top of the steps, I bump straight into Mum, who, without a word, drags me over to where Izzy and Ian are sitting with Jess, Rob, Nelson and Kieran.
Sit down, she says, pushing me onto a chair. I'll get you something to eat.
I fall into the chair. My elbows find the table, and I put my head in my hands.
Everything all right, Adam?
Jess asks. Livia's mother just arrived, I say, forcing my head up.
What?
Kieran almost spills her water.
Oh gosh, is she okay?
Jess asks worriedly. Nelson gives me a glass of wine and I take it, my fingers fumbling on the stem. I think so. I left her down on the terrace.
What, with that old battle axe?
Rob says. Was that wise of you? I'm so tired I can't find the energy to shut him down. She seems different. Livia's father's dead, apparently.
Oh no, poor Livia.
Kieran looks upset.
No great loss, if you ask me, Rob says. He was always a miserable bastard.
He says it as if he knew Livia's father, when I know he never actually met him. I take a sip of wine, then finish the whole glass in one. The alcohol mixes with my exhaustion and begins to numb the fear of never seeing Marnie again. She can't have been on the plane that crashed, I tell myself. The alcohol making me bold. I'd know if something had happened to her. I'd just know. Kieran and Izzy are discussing Patricia's arrival, their voices rushed. When Patricia asked me if Marnie had arrived, I told her the flight had been delayed and that she wouldn't be arriving until after midnight, and reminded her not to say anything to Livia. I've told so many lies tonight. I reach for my glass, then remember it's empty. Adam, did you hear me? I look across the table at Rob. He's lounging back in his chair, his right foot raised and resting on his left leg, his hands behind his head.
Sorry?
I asked if you ever believed that Aldershot would beat Leeds in the third round of the FA Cup.
I struggle to follow what he's saying.
What? Come on, Rob, of course they never would have,
Nelson says from across the table. Rob's face momentarily hardens.
I was asking Adam, he says. Anyway, he adds, his features flipping back into a smile.
Leeds would have beaten Aldershot if the referee hadn't been biased, and then they'd have slaughtered Man United. A few people laugh, and I feel a weird sense of disorientation. I can't believe that I'm sitting here listening to people talking about football. I need to move. I can't stay here. I'm pushing my chair back when the words "plane crash" slam into my consciousness. My heart misses a beat and I stare at Rob because I'm sure it was him who uttered the words. But he's looking at Ian, not me.
"You mean the Pyramid Air flight?" Ian asks. "Yes, I saw it on the news. It's heartbreaking."
"I didn't read any of the news reports. It's too sad," Jess says.
"It crashed on takeoff from Cairo," Rob explains, leaning forwards. "It was on its way to Amsterdam. Around 240 people on board, no survivors apparently."
Jess shivers and pulls a shawl over her shoulders. "I hate flying. That's why I didn't want to go to Hong Kong. That and Rob not wanting me to go."
"Only because I thought the flight would be too much for you," Rob says, putting his hand on her knee.
"I hate flying too,"
Izzy says. "Every time I hear about a crash, I vow never to get on a plane again. I always do, though."
"Let's change the subject, shall we?" Ian suggests. "It doesn't seem right that we're sitting here drinking and chatting when so many people will be grieving."
"You're right, but life's too short," Rob says, "and it has to go on."
He lifts his glass.
"Cheers."
There's a sound of breaking glass, and I feel a stab of pain. Looking down, I see that the wine glass has shattered in my hand.
"Adam, you're bleeding,"
Izzy cries. As well as bleeding, my hand is also shaking uncontrollably. Grabbing a napkin, I cover it and stand up.
"I need to go and get this sorted."
"Do you want me to come with you?"
"No, please don't. It's fine."
"Adam, what's happened?"
I look up and see Livia standing in front of me.
"I think Marnie might have been on the plane that crashed, Livia. That's what's happened."
"He cut himself on a glass," Izzy says. "He's okay. He's going to clean it up."
Livia pulls the napkin from my hand.
"Ouch," she says, peering at the gash. "It's deep. It must hurt."
"Are you all right, Livia?"
Jess asks.
"Yes, I'm fine. Adam says your mum is here."
Livia smiles at her.
"Was. She just left." "How did it go?"
Kieran asks carefully, as if she's almost afraid to ask. Livia's breath catches.
"Fine, I think."
"So, a bridge mended,"
Ian says, nodding.
"It's early days."
Livia turns to me.
"Come on. Let me have a proper look at your hand."
I follow her over to the wall. We sit side by side and she takes my hand in hers.
"If there weren't so many people in the way, we'd be able to see the photos of Marnie."
The gentle touch of her fingers and the sharp physical pain as she probes the wound makes everything recede. Until there's no Marnie, no people, no noise, no party. Just me and Livia.
"It should be all right,"
she says, inspecting the napkin for a clean bit, then pressing it onto the cut and closing my hand over it to keep it in place.
"You'll need to disinfect it, though."
She reaches up and places her hand on my cheek.
"You okay?"
"I forgot to shave, sorry."
"Don't be sorry, I like you exactly as you are."
"What about you? Are you all right? With your mother turning up?"
She nods slowly.
"She said that you wrote to her."
"I thought I was doing the right thing, but now I don't know."
"You did do the right thing. Thank you."
She reaches up and kisses me.
"Your father?"
"I'm glad he's dead,"
she says fiercely.
"I know I shouldn't say that, but I am. If he'd still been alive, Mum wouldn't have been able to come tonight. She told me something of what her life was like with him. I didn't realise how much she was under his control. I was too young to notice, I suppose. I thought she was happy that he was the one who made all the decisions, but it seems she didn't have a choice.
I'm glad you're pleased she turned up. But you will be careful, won't you?
Don't worry, I'm not going to fall into her arms or anything. We need to take it step by step. But she'd like to meet Josh before he leaves tomorrow evening.
She turns to me.
She's staying with the Grangers. Do you remember them? It was Irene who brought her over tonight. Mum told me she nearly didn't come, that she lost her courage, but Irene persuaded her to. Told her she'd regret it. She was waiting outside in the car, which is why Mum couldn't stay longer. Would you mind if she came over tomorrow afternoon, just for an hour?
Of course not, I say. I try to hold an image in my mind of Livia's mum sitting on the sofa tomorrow afternoon with Josh and Marnie either side of her. I need so much to believe it will happen. So are you happy? I go on, needing her to say it, because if she's happy, I can live with the decision I made not to say anything about Marnie.
Ridiculously happy,
she says, smiling up at me, her eyes bright with unshed tears. She lifts her hand and rests it against my cheek.
This is a new beginning for me, Adam. Thank you for making it happen.
Her words cut through me like a knife. Are you two lovebirds going to sit there all night? A voice calls. Aren't you meant to be socializing? Adam, your mum's brought your food over. Come back here. Livia tenses at Rob's clumsy interruption.
Come on, we'd better get back to the party.
I nod. You go and sit with Jess and the others while I sort out my hand.
No.
She says it so forcefully that I flinch. She gives me a weak smile.
I'd better go and chat with the neighbours.
She starts moving away, but I catch hold of her and draw her towards me. Is tonight everything you wanted it to be?
It's more than I wanted it to be, if that's possible,
she says, wrapping her arms round me and leaning her head against my chest.
Except for Marnie.
Marnie. A strange weakness comes over me, and if Livia hadn't been holding me, my legs might have given way. Adrenaline kicks back in.
I know it might not seem like it, she says, but sometimes things happen for a reason.
Is that what Josh not going to New York is? A reason. A reason for us to be able to carry on without Marnie because we'll have Josh close by, instead of on another continent.
Like Mum turning up,
Livia goes on. I know she felt able to come because Dad died, but why did he die now? Why not years ago when she could have got to know Josh and Marnie? There must be a reason why she's turned up now at this moment in time, when it's almost too late to have a relationship with them. She pauses. She wants to move back to the area, by the way. Did fate have a hand in her mum turning up tonight? I'm not giving up on Marnie. I could never do that. But there's a small comfort in the thought that if the very worst has happened, if Marnie doesn't make it home, Livia will have her mother nearby.